We are going to start today with our guest, Dan Dillon, who is the founder of CleanAndSupply.com. Dan, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Good morning, Sharmana. How are you? Great to see you again.
Great to see you as well. Tell us what you do. Tell our audience what the business of Clean It Supply is.
Sure. CleanAndSupply.com is an e-commerce business that sells cleaning products, office supplies, industrial and safety, food service related items, both to commercial and to residential consumers.
And how did you get this business off the ground?
You know, it was a little bit of a fully charged crystal ball, but I felt as though way back in 2006 that soon enough the internet would be able to support selling products online and e-commerce and transactions there, where convenience was a big play and big factor. And we decided to take my industry expertise. My background was commercial cleaning, and I was in the family business, and we sold it, and I decided to go hot and heavy with what I knew, and that was the cleaning industry. That's the core surrounding actually our brand, CleanAndSupply.com, and that we were able to help those contractors and office managers and anyone who consumes cleaning-related products and be able to offer that to them in a convenience vehicle that we could deliver right to their doorstep quickly and have a broad range of offering of both professional grade and just your everyday consumables, the big brand names.
And so you said you had a previous family business that you sold. Does that mean that you put in some of the money from that sale into the starting CleanAndSupply.com?
Yeah, I made a small investment of about $50,000 just to get going. Things like computers, you know, office rent, just to get going. But
some
it was
inventory.
Pretty much, actually, there really wasn't much inventory because the model was to use wholesale distribution, so we wouldn't buy it until we sold it. So really, a lot of money was just, you know, pens, papers, desk, computers, and getting set up to get going to have an office environment to solely focus on launching the business.
I see. So you took the orders online, but and you used your prior relationships with these wholesalers, and then you bought the inventory after you received the order.
That's correct. So we would make the offering available on the via data feeds and imagery and content and put it out there and build out the site. And then, of course, price it all out. And then when a conversion happened, we would then communicate with the wholesaler and say, we have this order, please place it and ship it. And then we would then get invoiced, you know, on a 30-day rolling term, and we would pay. So we'd actually get the money ahead of time via credit card. So if a transaction happened today, I'd be paid tomorrow, but I would owe for 29 days after that. Correct.
That's a great model from a cash flow point of view.
Yep, cash flow is king, right?
Yes. And also, let me point out that it's also a great model that you're not doing the shipping either. It's not like you have to buy the products, bring it into your warehouse and ship. You're basically taking the order. You're doing the marketing and the customer acquisition. You're taking the order and you're passing the order on to the wholesaler, and wholesaler does the packaging and the drop ship.
That's correct. So there's a value associated with that, right? And so there's a premium that has to be paid for. Therefore, it does squish margins, but from a cash flow perspective, it's correct. But yes, you continue to do what your company can do well, and for us, it's marketing. So the margin and the profits inside of that activity is then able to be reinvested in e-commerce type marketing activities, everything from search engine optimization, PLAs, email marketing, retargeting, you name it. That's where we invest that margin to continue to grow.
So talk about customer acquisitions. Marketing is your sweet spot. What did you learn in 2006, 2007? What did you learn was the key and most successful, most productive, profitable customer acquisition channel for you?
So interesting enough, that was kind of our specialty with search engine optimization, which is a longer process to build. It's more difficult to rank organically than it is to have quick and fast paid search. But then you're kind of building your business, from my perspective, on a house of cards, right? Only if you had money could you advertise. Therefore, we went to something to build a long-term asset for the business. While slower and more difficult, it bears fruit a lot faster and better when you're making the investments in search engine optimization. So that's the route that we took.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take you to hit the $1 million mark from a revenue point of view, annual revenue?
So you're making me really reminisce here. We launched the business in late 2006, and it looks like we crossed $1 million in top-line revenue in 2009. So really we had 2007 and 8 to ramp up, and in 2009 we hit the $1 million top-line revenue mark.
And what so that's 2008, 2009, and we are in 2016. What are the current metrics of the business? What have been the growth rates?
Sure. So I can tell you that you and I met the first time in 2013. We were speculating to do about $5 million. We actually closed out at $6.3 million in 2013. And then here, fast forward to today, we closed 2016 at $11 million. And we're hoping to be about $13 to $15 million here for 2017.
And you have continued to maintain the same model through all this growth. You take the orders and the wholesaler does the fulfillment?
That is correct. We do inventory one or two small manufacturers, Shermana, that we might not, I guess for lack of a better word, trust the data share with. Because they're smaller companies, and our activities are, and our audience, they could get too excited to potentially go after them, so we don't data share. So we'll bring that into our office, and we'll cross-dock it and ship it. So we blind them from who the client is. But generally speaking, yes, I would tell you that 98% of our business is via wholesalers and all EDI communications. So, yes, same model, just scaling it.
Okay. And have you done anything, have you made any moves in the, you know, last 8 years, let's say, to change the margin structure of the business? Have you?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that's actually a current event for us. So if I flash back about 3 years ago, we approached the manufacturers and said, listen, because of the value add of the wholesaler doing all the drop ship and doing all the inventory, and we're doing the marketing side, we could really use support from you to do additional marketing. Can you support us? So we would approach the big companies such as Rubbermaid Commercial, Kimberly-Clark, Procter & Gamble, and say, will you fund us with marketing dollars to default or offset, rather, some of the lack of margin through the wholesaler? So we got the manufacturers to get behind us to give us money to increase sales. So we would actually be the person to pull through that inventory. So while they're stuffing inventory down the wholesaler's throat and saying, you must stock this and here comes three tractor trailers, they need somebody on the other side to pull it through. So knowing that that need needed to be met, I would approach them and say, well, why don't you give me some money and we will then do additional marketing, thus move that product through inventory and everybody wins. So that was one of the ways that we were raising additional funds to power the marketing side of the business. But what's happening now is because of all the exposure and the additional marketing efforts we're having as we're growing as a company, what we're doing now is embarking on private branding. So now that clients trust our business, know that they're going to get the products they order, understand that there's a face behind the company, that we are now embarking on doing private label. So one such activity we did was our number one selling SKU was a 2-ply toilet paper, believe it or not. We ranked number one on the internet for the word wholesale toilet paper. So the word wholesale correlates itself to the commercial consumer, right? So it's our number one selling SKU. We probably sell about $1.5 million a year worth of it. And we decided, you know what? Instead of getting middle, and we weren't getting enough dollar marketing support to offset the razor-thin margins in that particular product, that we would then go out to a manufacturer and make it and brand it our own. And so we ran that test in November of 2016, and we're just about sold through the tractor trailer load full, and that was our test bed because it was the largest dimensional weight, it was a low price product, and if we figured we could conquer or achieve some level of success with private labeling, that we could then scale that, and that is on our initiative plate for 2017 to scale that out.
And in that case, where you are doing private label products, what are the terms of the cash flow? So it's not like now you have to take inventory, is it?
Right. You're exactly right. So now the game changes, right? So cash flow becomes an issue. You have to be very strategic about what it is you want to bring into inventory. And now that we're a little bit more mature company, we can do that. But we, too, are considering, you know, outside support or banking support to take one SKU at a time, crawl, walk, run, and see how we can achieve success. But you're right. Once you start inventorying, you know, buying a tractor trailer full of toilet paper is $30,000, right? And there she sits collecting dust, and you better hope you got it right to turn that over. And then if you turn that over, then, you know, the margin should be in it and it should be a wider win. And if not, then you just chose the wrong product or you just, you know, pulled the wrong straw. But you're absolutely correct. Once you begin inventorying, you know, that can really cash crunch the business, which could limit your marketing capabilities, which you never want to do from our seat. We don't want to do.
Now, have you established banking relationships such that you can finance that inventory through bank financing?
So our business has become mature enough where we can get credit lines, right, for the bank.
Absolutely.
And so the credit lines are very handy for that. Once the business began cash flowing over the last few years, we were able to systematically dive in and say, well, we can afford payroll, we can afford these marketing activities, we can do X, Y, and Z, but as soon as you start embarking on this concept of private labeling, you're right. Here you go. You go right to the credit line, right? And you can use their money for that. I don't foresee that we're going to go to the point where we need outside money, but it's possible on how aggressive we want to be and how successful our tests and as we ramp what's going to turn out to be like.
Well, I think you can do it with bank financing, inventory financing, credit lines, and so forth. And there are any number of, you know, creative tools, financing tools right now out there that would support that model. I don't think you need to go into any kind of equity financing for this business right at any time soon. So that's just my, read of your business.
I hope you're right. It only depends how aggressive we want to be, right? And I agree with you. One of the biggest things that we're proud about and how I met you was to talk about how to bootstrap the business. And we invested every dime we made back into the next, you know, the next marketing activity or the next investment in the business to help us grow, whether it's internal staff, computer developers, customer service folks, you name it. We constantly reinvested into the business and bootstrapped it. So to accept outside money or to give shares away of our company is not something that we worked 11 years to just give away for the sake of wanting to be greedy and scale bigger. So we want to be very methodical about how we go about building our business. And I hope you're right. I hope I don't need to go that direction. But, of course, we're able to guide that, right?
So how many people do you have on the team, Dan?
So I think we're up to about 35 full-time employees. Yeah.
And how does that spit out in terms of functional areas?
So customer service, sales, operations, accounting, our technical department, and then something new for our business since we last spoke is we built a complete studio. A video studio. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple people in there as well. And in that studio has really changed the temperature of our business because now we created over 2,500 videos in the last year and a half surround spotlighting mm-hmm. product. And we're able to do that from a certain engine optimization perspective, drive more organic traffic. It's really great Google food organically. And it's really propelled the business, and not only that, but really built the brand. So I would say customer service, operations, sales, and then our technical department, which kind of blends in with our studio.
Okay. You have a great question from the audience. John Spichka, I don't know how to say your name, John. I apologize. The question he's asking is, how do suppliers react to you having a private label product, and are you not now competing with your suppliers?
Yeah, great question, John. Absolutely, they don't like it. But at the same time, they can't forfeit the other, you know, $8 to $10 million that we drive to them. So in order, they understand that you have to build your own brand as well. So they understand that. They don't want to see you do too much of it. But in order to be a viable player in the e-com space and your competitor doing it and you're not, you got to get on board. So they are a little apprehensive about it, especially if you pick their number one SKU. There's no two ways about it, but it also captures their attention to give you better pricing, because remember, your optimal goal here is to get margin. So, okay, Mr. Manufacturer, okay, supplier, motivate me not to do it. Give me more margin, and you'll save me and save. We'll work together closer. So that's really my rebuttal of, you know, if the manufacturers don't like that we're private labeling, well then, you know, give us more margin and we'll sell more of your product. Otherwise, we'll do our own.
It's a very, very standard practice in retail and has been forever, is that once a retailer starts to get a bit of a business worked out, some portion of that business turns into private labels just for that reason, for the margin reason. It's, you know, sure. Retailers have done that forever. So then if you think about you versus, so let's say I'm a commercial cleaning company, or I'm an office that has a lot of cleaning needs and I need cleaners, cleaning supplies. Walk me through the process of what is the advantage of working with you versus Amazon? Because nowadays Amazon puts toilet papers on subscription and all kinds of things, and they have incredible pricing. So why would I choose to work with your company?
Great question. So Amazon is the big guy in the room, and they are very price-driven, and they're hell-bent on client acquisition and the lifetime value of the customer, and nobody does it better. Amazon's a scary monster, even for the manufacturers. So while we sell via the Amazon marketplace channel, we also compete directly with them. We rank number one for the word janitorial supplies. Amazon's number two. We trade places periodically, but this week, knock on wood, we're winning. So it's one of our big terms, but why should someone do business with us? Well, something that Amazon isn't good at is the consultation piece, right? Could you call someone, first of all, it's clunky to call Amazon, but could you call someone at Amazon and ask them how to strip and refinish a floor, how to buy the right carpet extraction machine, right? The specialty niche inside the industry. So there is value add with that. Me coming from a service business, we are really focused on the customer experience and being able to support them all through the sales process. And, of course, we want them coming back. We're trying to increase LTV as well. But our expertise in the space is what really separates us from Amazon. But the Me Too products, the big brand names, the Cloroxes, the Rubbermaids, the Kimberly-Clarks, the Procter & Gamble's, you're right. If it's a price game, you know, Amazon's going to win. They just are. And it's a race to zero. Now, with the repricing tools and things like that that Amazon has, they do have thresholds. They know when to stop sign and when to quit. We've tested that. But generally speaking, Amazon is a trusted source, and that lends itself to making sure that our company becomes a highly trusted source when you visit. Everything from the speed of the website, the usability of the website, the ease of checkout, right? All those things are important in order for a consumer to have trust in your website and trust in your business. And then, again, the power of video to let them know that there's real people behind the business that really know what they're doing. So the value add to compete against Amazon is having your niche and knowing how to service that client.
You know, this is a question that is coming up a lot. How do you compete with Amazon as a small business, as a small retailer? And I recently, you know, we have the Thought Leaders in Electronic Commerce series on the blog, and we recently had the CEO of Magento on that series. I don't think we published that interview yet. We are going to publish it, I think, in May. And you'll see this discussion exactly on this topic. Magento caters to, you know, tens of thousands of small e-commerce companies. And everybody is facing this question. And my take on how do you build a niche e-commerce company today is twofold. One is you need a user experience that is differentiated, something that Amazon cannot match. So whatever is your niche, within that niche, there are opportunities for differentiation, opportunities for value addition, which is what you're pointing to in your case. People want to talk about certain products and certain functional activities that they need customer support on, and you have specialists who can walk them through on the, by phone on those processes. That's number one. And number two is actually product-based differentiation. In your case, that doesn't quite apply because the products that you're taking private label, like toilet paper, are actually commodity products. These are not differentiated products. But I do believe that if you are audience, if you are thinking about starting an e-commerce company today, you have to keep in mind that you will need to compete with Amazon, and you won't be able to compete in, like, delivery time. Amazon, even $2 products, Amazon is going to deliver next day. You can't compete with that. So you're going to have to compete with user experience, and you're going to have to compete with product. So if the ideal situation is you have a user experience differentiation and you have a product level differentiation, a product that is a unique product, a private label unique product where you can, which is not available on Amazon and people have to buy it from you. That's my kind of analysis and synthesis of the retail e-commerce market today. Do you agree with what I said?
Shermana, I agree with everything you said. You hit the nail on the head. You know, just to reinforce your statement, I was at the International Retail Show in the New York, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, and I was going up and down the aisles, and you know how you go to some of these shows, you don't understand what the heck the company does because there's such broad or vague messages. And one particular backdrop at displaying at the booth, I could understand what the company did, and I stopped and I said, how are you going to tell me to compete with Amazon? And nice gentleman, I don't recall the name of the company, and I said, well, private label is the only way to get around it because you can't do the Me Too activities, right? You're not going to Me Too and compete against Amazon. You're just not, to your point. So one of the fastest way around it is being able to have a private brand. You have to build that brand, but have a private brand, and it could be a similar consumable product like our toilet paper, but, you know, toilet paper might not be the best example, but being able to private brand is the way you can beat Amazon, where you get your own ASIN number, and you could actually find that need to compete against the big brand names. And when I began describing that to this gentleman, he took me by the elbow, and he kind of shuffled me away from the booth. He goes, that's it, right? He says, you don't need me. You don't need my services, but you hit the nail on the head. So to reinforce that your point is correct, there's actually companies out there selling that secret sauce as the message, whereas you were able to lay it out right there just a moment ago. So there you have it. You're right. The private label is it.
So a couple of questions in the audience. Sachin Kanade is asking, what was your motivation and strategy to enter the e-commerce market where already big players like eBay were playing in the business?
Just a lot of nerve. I got to tell you that it wasn't just nerve. I knew I was an expert in my space, and I knew I could share my knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's your domain knowledge which drove you into this space. My read of your story is that you really had expertise for a lot of years in that in the cleaning supply space, and you just wanted to turn it into an e-commerce business.
You're absolutely right, and no one really looked at the janitorial the JanSan vertical as though it could be specialty. And me being in the business, I understood it was. And not everybody with a mop, bucket, and wringer can have a commercial cleaning service business or know how to utilize chemistry and chemicals. And in the Northeast region here, I realized how important that was. And so I want to share that knowledge, that skill set that I had, and be able to power it or stand behind it while selling the products and helping people. And once you earn their trust and their loyalty and you help solve problems and you're there for them, with a customer service aspect, you will have a viable business. People will come back to you, and they will be loyal to your brand. So that's kind of the reason why I started, was because of my industry knowledge. So my advice to the listeners is, if you are an expert at something, I don't care if it's knitting, I don't care if you know how to clean leather couches better than someone else, or if you're really good at detailing cars or whatever it may be, take that expertise and broadcast it and get behind it, because no one will be able to challenge you, because you are, in fact, the subject matter expert in your space, and there is where you can build a viable business, whether it be against Amazon, with them, as a vehicle, you name it, you can run with it if you're an expert in your space.
Now, I have a favorite example of this, you know, really playing into the domain knowledge as your competitive advantage. You know Blue Nile? Blue Nile is a, you know, public company. It's a multi-hundred-million-dollar a year diamond retailer. So they sell diamonds online. And the founder had, again, domain knowledge because of his family business in the world of diamonds. And contrary to the popular belief that women buy diamonds, he understood that it's men who buy diamonds. And the way men buy diamonds is very different than how women buy diamonds. So he built the whole business around that expertise. In 1999, Blue Nile was started, and it became a very successful retailer, kind of off-center from Amazon and eBay, because of that deep expertise, deep domain knowledge, and Mark Vadon built a fabulous company based on that domain knowledge. So no, don't underestimate the power of your domain knowledge. If you do have domain knowledge in any area, pay a lot of attention to that. And this is not just in e-commerce, by the way, in anything. If, even if you're doing a software company or hardware company, if you have domain knowledge, that is of immense value, and you can do something special with an unfair advantage in that case. We'll take one last question from the audience. Indra Raj Chavda is asking, Dan, what is your advertising strategy?
A great question. So we do a lot of, there's a lot of moving parts in e-commerce. Foundationally, search engine optimization, I believe, is what you fundamentally need to power an e-commerce site. We do a lot of product listing ads through Google. And we also do email marketing. So once you're capturing these audiences, to make sure that you are facilitating your existing clients with messaging to stay in touch with them. We also do data feeds out to the comparison shopping engines, and we engage with Amazon, of course, and in their marketplace, and with eBay. Do not discount eBay. Everyone had an old, there's a stigma with eBay that it was just a bunch of garage junk, and that's not necessarily true. The majority of the products on eBay are new products. It's a viable marketplace. They do a great job. So the only downside about doing business with Amazon and eBay and their marketplace is that you cannot follow up and contact the customer other than through their portal. So if you're driving organic traffic, that you own that client customer base, you can then establish a sales force behind it, which we're beginning to grow now, and have them follow up with them clients, learn more about them, and sell them more, and increase the average order value size of your business. It's not necessarily how much traffic you can drive, it's how profitable you can make your clients, the clients that you have in hand. And for us, that was a success for our business. But yeah, it's email, it's search engine optimization, it's the marketplaces, it's retargeting ads, it's Facebook retargeting ads. I could go on and on. I mean, it's a lot of digital.